Hello, one and all, and welcome back to the AirPod, your favourite place for all the latest news on the British royal family. I'm Omid Scobie, your host, and Maggie, are you there?
Hello, how's it going, Omid?
Our wonderful ABC News foreign correspondent, Maggie Rooley, in the house. How are you doing?
Oh, good. And it's not just the two of us, because the breaking news right before this podcast was that Yoshi is also in the room.
Oh, yeah. So my dog, who was snoring in the other room, has now come to sit in this room and snore next to me. So apologies if that gets picked
That's
up.
That's the one silver lining, I think, of the UK being back on lockdown, is that we get to hear Yoshi's snores behind you as you work from home.
Yeah, how are you doing? We're sort of well over a week into it now. Comfortable? A little bored?
It's always difficult, I think, lockdown 2.0, because we've been here before, so this time we know the drill, which makes it maybe easier. But it's also, we know what we're in for, which maybe makes it a little bit harder.
Yeah, I was walking around my neighborhood the other day, and I noticed a lot of Christmas decorations and lights up already. Like, people need something to
do.
They're impatient.
So that was me. Omid, this is actually a real conversation. I had to have friends step in with an intervention, because I was trying to get my Christmas tree this weekend. Is it too early?
Wow, okay.
Is it too early?
You know, in any other year, absolutely, it is far too early. I think a Christmas tree should never go up in outside of December.
Ugh,
but we are home all the time, and I feel like it is something to brighten up the mood of the place,
right?
That's for sure.
I was only discouraged.
Question is, do you get a real one?
Well, that was the problem. If you get a real one, it's going to be dead by Christmas Day if you buy it now. So I'll wait a couple more weeks. I'll be responsible, whatever, Omid.
You've still got Thanksgiving to prep.
That's true. That's true. Since I'm an American, I get extra holidays.
Exactly. And speaking of being American, last time we did this podcast, we were unsure of what was about to happen to the U.S.
That's true.
And you now have a president. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a really big week for America. Obviously, there's still some turmoil going on. I would say my colleagues that are stateside right now, I feel for, I don't think they've slept in probably, well, at least the past week, watching some of them pulling, 19 hours on air, covering these election results rolling in. I think everyone's in need of a break. I don't know if we're going to get one anytime soon, but at least there seems to be, some more answers today than we had last week.
Absolutely. I had a lot of friends in the U.S. that just said it felt like a weight was off their shoulders. I think there'd been so much worry and anxiety and just that sort of uncertainty around what is such a crucial moment in time. And I think just to know what the outcome is, that's like all anyone wanted.
Yeah, well, it's tough when there's so much uncertainty, when you have this massive election and then also, a pandemic that's unfortunately picking up steam as well, and the threat of future lockdowns. It's like, we just need one thing that's stable, right?
Absolutely. Well, today's World Kindness Day, Maggie.
Oh, we
are
what we need.
Still stuck indoors. But how are you acknowledging it today?
Well, I like that. I'll start by saying, Omid, I think you're a wonderful person, and we're going to start the kindness there. I like this momentum to give compliments to other people, hopefully, and share some kindness and spread a little bit of love.
Oh, I love that. Well, as I've always said on this show, you are our ray of sunshine.
Oh.
And I would say across the entire bureau, I think that's kind of the known thing. If you spend an hour or so with Maggie, it's like a kind of, it's like a caffeine boost, a pick-me-up, a positivity boost. It's very much, much needed.
Oh, well, that is very kind. In honor of today, that is quite kind, Omid. It really means a lot. And same back to you. I think if people haven't watched yet, a reminder to go check out our Halloween episode, because that was really fun, where we got to be in person for the first time in a long time together, being silly, celebrating Halloween. And, I think it's easy to have fun when you're with fun, kind people. So it makes a difference.
Love that. Well, I'm looking forward to our next outing. But Brits also have a very good reason to get excited. Oh, kind of. I mean, this is a little way off. But it's been announced that the nation is to be treated with an extra day off work to mark the Queen reaching 70 years on the throne. The government is calling it a blockbuster, and they use that word, blockbuster celebration, for Her Majesty's Platinum Jubilee. And the people of the UK are going to enjoy a 4-day weekend.
And how long do you have to wait for this 4-day weekend, Omid? Tell me.
2022.
Sorry, I couldn't wait. It's a while off.
It's a while off. We're about 18 months away. This is the May holiday weekend. I think they're shifting it to the start of June and adding this additional day. So it allows for 4 days of events that the government promises will be the mix of the best of British ceremonial splendor and pageantry with cutting edge artistic and technological displays.
They know how to sell an event.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, it is a big deal. I mean, this is the first time that a British monarch has reached this milestone of 70 years on the throne. I think they've also got an official medal being created in honor of this. And this is a tradition that started back sort of in Queen Victoria's time, when there was an official medal made, I think, to mark her 50th anniversary on the throne. So this time around, they're doing one for the Platinum Jubilee. A medal will be awarded to people working in the public services, such as armed forces personnel and those in the emergency services. And I would like to think that we will be looking back on our period with COVID-19. It's a while away, but I think that hopefully this will be a period of recognition for a time that has passed. And I think that that medal will have some real significance.
I think it's a really good point, Omid. And we joke that it's a far time from now, but it is something to look forward to. And I think, you know, at the end of the day right now, we all need something to look forward to. So even if it's just the government giving us an extra day off of work or a new medal that's coming out celebrating hardworking men and women in the armed forces. I mean, these are all things that, you know, I'll take them right now. I'll take whatever we can get.
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
The last jubilee that we celebrated for the Queen was the Diamond Jubilee. We're now moving on to platinum. That's 70 years. 75 years isn't out of reach for the Queen. She'll be 101.
Yeah.
But when we look at the age of the Queen Mum, who lived to an even older age, have people thought about the precious material that will be used as the name inspiration for 75 years on the throne?
That's a really good point.
Where do you go
point.
From platinum?
Is there something above platinum? Double platinum?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
There you go. Double platinum.
I just made it up. Do we like it?
I think, submit
Dallas,
it.
I'm available for marketing and branding. Don't worry. I'm here all month.
You're on the Jubilee Planning Committee.
I'm on the Jubilee Planning Committee. I'm available.
Well, this week we also had the news of Camilla and Charles, Prince of Wales and Duchess of Cornwall, on the road, or at least going overseas. They are travelling to Germany at the request of the British government to attend the central remembrance ceremony in Berlin to commemorate their annual day of mourning on Sunday. So in a few days' time, depending on when you listen to this. I think this followed an invitation from the president of Germany, and this will see Charles and Camilla attend a wreath-laying ceremony at a war memorial before joining the central remembrance ceremony at the German parliament, where Charles will deliver a speech. And this is the first time that a member of the royal family has attended their remembrance ceremony in Germany, but of course follows our own remembrance services here in the UK.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was surprised how many headlines picked this up with the word historic and really showed what a big deal it was that the royals were going to this remembrance ceremony. I'm not sure that I even realized that until I started reading more, that you know, royals hadn't gone before. This is a fairly monumental impact that they're having by going to the ceremony. And then on top of that, obviously, just the fact that they're traveling right now during a pandemic, during lockdowns, it's really hard to travel right now. And so, you know, making this trip in the middle of all of this is significant.
Absolutely. Well, you're currently sort of working off your own quarantine time from having traveled in the UK. It'll be very interesting to see how the royal couple will have to deal with that, or if they'll have to deal with it, if perhaps there's somehow
exempt. So I looked
this
up. Because I was very curious, because I'm not exempt, so I'm doing my quarantine after coming back from Paris. And I guess, though, there are certain exemptions for diplomatic missions. So it's very likely that Camilla and Charles will actually not have to go for the full quarantine because they're part of this special group. I think there's like five exemptions, and one is, yeah, a diplomatic mission of some sort, which, you know, this is, they're going on visit to the Foreign Office, and so it does sort of seem to all line up. But I was really curious because I was like, oh gosh, are they going to have to quarantine now for 2 weeks? Like, how do the royals handle it? Are they really just like us?
Well, as I would say, this falls under that category. I mean, the focus of this year's services on the German-British friendship, which has grown massively in the 75 years since the end of the Second World War. So I think that is a diplomatic mission for sure.
I would say so.
It'll be interesting to see what the couple wear in light of the fashion launch in Prince Charles's name.
He
unveiled
point.
A collection with Net-a-Porter this week. It's an 18-piece line available to purchase now. Probably one of the most surprising partnerships we've seen in recent royal years. But this is a part of, we spoke about this on the last episode, it's a partnership between his community and education focused charity, the Prince's Foundation, and the online luxury retailer Net-a-Porter and Yuke's, and it's called the Modern Artisan Project. It's an 18-piece capsule collection. Students from Italy and the UK, or graduates from Italy and the UK, have worked to produce this. But what's really interesting about this is that these are clothes that are designed not just for one season, not just for a one-off use, but actual lifetime of use, which is quite a bold claim, to be honest. I mean, I can't get a pair of jeans to last that more than a few years. So.
Well, I will say I took a look at some of them, and they're very classic designs. So you can see how they, you know, they really could be timeless. But they're not cheap, Omid. Price tag is substantial.
I saw there's one item here. We've got the padded Donegal cashmere bomber jacket. A lovely
Which is
bomber
very
jacket.
Good looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, love this
and
jacket.
It's priced up at $1,550, which...
Yeah.
I mean,
that is
nice if you've got it.
Yeah, fair enough. And I guess, you know, the argument is if you just buy this one jacket, it lasts a lifetime. You know, that's an investment that will pay for itself. And it's better for the environment because you're buying fewer products, but they're higher quality and last forever. But the question is, are you really just going to have one jacket forever? I don't know. And it's a lot of money. We'll see. I appreciate the thought process, though, of sustainable fashion. I think that is so important. So I love that that is fundamental behind this line. And I hope to see, you know, more fashion houses and more designers and manufacturers really get behind this, because I think it's going to be so important moving forward. But still, that's a lot of money for a jacket.
It's a lot of money. But when you break down the costs, I say this because I actually really like this bomber jacket, and I'm sort of mulling it over.
Are you trying to justify buying this jacket right now on this podcast, Omid?
50% of the purchase price actually goes to the Prince's Foundation, which is, of course, a charity. So that's over 100% of the profits are going to charity. So a really good cause. When you actually look at how these clothes or these pieces are constructed as well, it's 100% traceable silk. A lot of the insulation or the padding in something like a jacket is actually recycled or it's organic. So they've really gone to sort of the best of the best to bring these pieces together. Still a lot of money, though.
If you need help enabling this purchase, I'm totally there for you, Omid. You could wear it, you know, on air, so that's like half price right there. It's helping the environment. It's going to charity. You're supporting your royals' work. I mean, what more facts do you need?
See, I think it's a great collection, but I think a trick was missed here, because if they had launched masks as part of the collection, I think it would have added like an affordable...
Oh, that's probably an more affordable side option.
Because the size of the fabric of a mask, that's probably more in my price range.
Oh, next time, Omid, next time.
Yeah.
The holidays are coming up.
Yeah, I was going to say, holidays are coming up, so remember
For
that.
For all your friends that are listening. Yeah, friends and family, take note.
Well, speaking of masks, we saw the Queen wearing a mask in public for the very first time at the weekend, with new photos shared by Buckingham Palace. of Her Majesty attending a private ceremony at Westminster Abbey to pay her respects at the grave of the unknown warrior on the 100th anniversary of the burial. This is, of course, all part wow. of remembrance services in the UK. And this was a poignant engagement because, of course, we're used to seeing the Queen pay her respects during the time of remembrance, where, of course, we remember those whose lives were sacrificed on the front lines at war and those who have served in the armed forces and currently serving in the armed forces as well. But of course, this all happened in complete isolation. And so this visit to Westminster Abbey took place last week. It was an unusual sight to see the Queen so alone in this moment, because it was just her at the grave of the unknown warrior. And what was special about this was a bouquet of flowers based on her own wedding bouquet was placed at the grave in an act of remembrance. And this featured orchids and myrtle. And it kind of follows a tradition that, you know, we've spoken about here when we covered weddings in the past. Royal brides will always have their wedding bouquet. They don't throw it. That's the one tradition that doesn't get followed. It gets placed on the grave of the unknown warrior, and sort of that act of remembrance. And it's been going on, I think, well, that tradition's been going on since 1923. So it's been a while. The Queen Mother laid her bouquet as she entered an abbey in the memory of her brother, who was killed at the Battle of Loos in 1915. So this is, a long line of remembrance. But this was interesting to see the Queen go ahead with something like this. I mean, I know when I checked in with Buckingham Palace to see if the Queen was continuing with remembrancing-related engagements, the answer was sort of an unequivocal yes, because there is no way on earth, regardless of what was going on, that she would miss out.
I think a word you used before was really poignant as well. I think you called the whole event somber this year. And while it's always a very, you know, moving and powerful and heartbreaking, but also, you know, spiritual event, this year, because there were fewer people there, because it almost seemed like the Queen was on her own going through this, it was very somber. And the weight of it, you could really feel, perhaps even more so than other years, when it is sort of a larger event. I think sometimes, you know, you think scaling back makes things less powerful, but sometimes it almost makes it mean more. You know, seeing just the Queen there having this moment, it was somber and it was really impactful.
And I think, for those that don't know, the grave of the unknown warrior is, it's considered the final resting place of an unidentified British soldier who died during the First World War, which is where our Remembrance Week commemoration sort of first began. And this serviceman's body was brought from northern France and buried at Westminster Abbey on the 11th of November in 1920. And so this grave represents not just this one serviceman, but it represents all fallen troops and military personnel, which is why it has such symbolism in this sort of moment of remembrance.
So who all was there, Omid? I know that it was such a scaled down event compared to years past, but, you know, who actually was able to come out and show their respects and be there with the Queen?
Well, that was really on the Sunday. Remembrance Sunday was when we had our moment, which would have been usually in London and a part of the city, Whitehall, packed with thousands of veterans and members of the military for commemorations. But as you say, it was much more scaled back. So the Queen was out again on Sunday, marking or leading the nation in marking Remembrance Sunday, as people in the UK had to, of course, pay their respects at home in lockdown. But she was joined by certain senior members of the royal family and the Prime Minister at the service at the Cenotaph War Memorial. So there was full social distancing measures in place. The entire service was closed off to the public, but there was the 2-minute silence, followed by wreaths laid by Prince Charles, Prince William, Prime Minister Boris Johnson, amongst others. And so, as we said, this remembers the armed forces community and the British and Commonwealth veterans, the Allies who fought alongside the UK, including the US, the civilian servicemen and women involved in both of the world wars and later conflicts. It's not just World War One, but very strange to see it in such a smaller capacity. But as you say, it actually carried more impact, I think, to see it so silent, to see Whitehall so silent during that time, was quite surreal.
And I also think it's important to note and remind people that, right now the UK and London's under full lockdown. So everything is closed. You're really not supposed to go out and meet up with a member of a different household. This is, we're back to sort of square one. And so to have everyone out at an event like this was already sort of making a statement that this was an important thing that was happening. I mean, bringing the Queen out to an event under lockdown would pretty much not happen for 99.9% of the events in the world right now. But the fact that she came out for this one, I think speaks to, how important this event really is.
Absolutely. Well, we're used to seeing many members of the royal family take part in this particular ceremony. Prince Harry was always a regular fixture, but of course, this year spent Remembrance Sunday in Los Angeles. There was a story in the Sunday Times about Harry requesting for a wreath to be laid on his behalf at the National Memorial at the Cenotaph in London on the Remembrance Sunday, and it was reported that courtiers and palace officials, and I've checked this myself, it is true, decided that he couldn't have his wreath added to those from other members of the royal family because he and Meghan are no longer working members of the institution. A decision that I would say has been controversial, when you look at the sort of divided opinion over this issue. Now, Harry, of course, served in the army for 10 years. He rose to the rank of captain. He undertook two tours of duty in Afghanistan. He has dedicated the rest of his life to serving the military community and wounded veterans. We've got the Invictus Games, the Invictus Foundation. This is a huge part of his life. And so to see him denied the honour of having this wreath placed in his name, I think was hard news for many. I certainly was uncomfortable with just sort of even reading the story. I felt very sad for this moment.
I think that is a really good point. I think that, all of the things that Harry has done with the military community sort of make this just a bigger moment. Because in theory, they are no longer working members of the royal family, and this was sort of a working royal event, and people laid wreaths only if they, were there in a position of authority, which Harry has given up. He's no longer a working member of the royal family. So, again, in theory, when you look at it that way, it sort of makes sense if someone says, well, you're no longer a working member of the royal family, so you're not going to partake in this thing that only working members of the royal family partake in. That all makes sense. But then when you add the emotion to it, the fact that it was an event that, honors fallen soldiers and honors people that have lost their lives in the military and their families, and the fact that Harry has done so much to help veterans, is a veteran himself. I mean, it just is a lot of it. It's just, it adds this emotion to it that even if rationally you understand the decision, just the emotion behind it is somewhat heartbreaking.
Absolutely. And let's separate that. I mean, let's talk about it rationally. Because, of course, as you say, he is no longer a working member of the royal family. He was, I mean, very publicly stripped of his royal, his military honours as a working member of the royal family. Almost 6 months ago to this day, actually. But when we look at the purpose of these wreaths during this ceremony, we have to note that these aren't personal wreaths laid by members of the royal family. Each one symbolizes or represents a different section of the armed forces. So William lays one for the Royal Air Force, Princess Anne lays one for the Royal Navy. Prince Harry, if he was here as a working member of the royal family, would have laid his wreath on behalf of the Royal Marines, and the Queen's represents the nation. So there are no personal wreaths in this situation. However, after wreaths are laid by senior members of the royal family and the prime minister, there are other wreaths laid on behalf of charities and organizations that support the military and veteran communities. Now, Harry is someone that's very much as part of that. I'm not sure how there couldn't have been some sort of compromise made to accommodate really one of the most prominent royal war veterans of our time. And it's a decision that I find quite hard to understand. I obviously understand and respect protocol, but I also think that there are times where you can bend the rules a little bit to be decent. And so, yeah, it's been interesting. I think what was really special about this, though, was seeing just how many people within the armed forces, veterans and current working personnel, who spoke up for Harry. There were so many messages of support, people that stood firmly in his corner. One tweet here, I won't read out the name just in case I don't want it to be shared, but it said he lost his mother as a boy, served his country proudly, and had a huge impact on the lives of many wounded veterans and their families around the world. He's now working at being a dad and a husband away from the UK. For what it matters, I'm firmly in his corner. Go well, Harry. And I agree with that, and I think that he would have been very touched to see that level of support, but not a great look. And I think what was more surprising than the story itself was the fact that whoever within the institution of the monarchy felt like it decided to give that information that this wreath had been denied to one of the most read British newspapers, which again just sort of puts out this very personal information for public consumption and takes away from what should have been a moment that only focuses on war veterans. I don't think people would have been asking where was Harry's wreath if the subject hadn't have come up in on the pages of the Sunday Times.
Oh, that's such a good point. I mean, it's one thing to follow protocol, it's another to kind of maliciously bring up rumors or stir controversy, especially when it's around something like Remembrance Day. It kind of is mind-boggling.
That said, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex did find their own very special way of commemorating Remembrance Sunday within California. Beautiful set of photos. We'll be talking about those just after the break, and also finding out what else Harry's doing to raise money and support the military community. Welcome back. Well, as we said before the break, Harry and Meghan found their own way to pay tribute to fallen soldiers on Remembrance Day this past Sunday, heading over to the Los Angeles National Cemetery to pay tribute to fallen soldiers and to those who had sacrificed themselves to secure and protect the freedom of others, not just in the UK, but across the Commonwealth and the US. This was, Maggie, the first time we'd really seen Harry and Meghan in some time, and I think to get a new set of photos for a particularly something we know is so important to Harry, I think was pretty meaningful.
It did kind of feel like a flashback, didn't it? Like all of a sudden it was almost comforting in a weird way to have these traditional photos again that we were used to from a time well over a year ago now. But to see them doing something, like you say, that may even have looked more like their previous lives, but clearly was something that is so important to Harry that he wanted to keep it a part of his life now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in these pictures, we saw Harry and Meghan wearing commemorative poppies on their lapels. We spoke about the significance of those before, but carefully laying bouquets of flowers that Meghan had picked from the gardens of their Montecito home, and placed them at the resting places of two Commonwealth soldiers. So, a man who had served in the Royal Australian Air Force and one from the Royal Canadian Artillery. So, again, that nod to the Commonwealth, whilst also laying a wreath at an obelisk in the cemetery that featured a plaque that said, "In memory of the men who offered their lives in defence of their country." And so, I think it was very smart of Harry and Meghan to, as you know, we were just a few days away from Veterans Day at the time, to acknowledge servicemen and women, past and present, in the US and across the Commonwealth. And that's kind of a sign of the way they'll work moving forwards. It's sort of keeping abreast of everything everywhere, not being people of just one country. But of course, as we know, Harry would have very much liked to have been part of the commemorative services here in the UK, and this was his way of still doing that in his new home.
Well, yeah, I think it's a good point, and it's always good to remind everyone, and myself included, that if it wasn't for the pandemic and lockdowns and travel restrictions, we fully anticipated Harry and Meghan to be, kind of have homes in both places. Clearly, they're living in America and would have lived in America, but they were supposed to be coming back to the UK very frequently for engagements and, to see family and to just live their regular lives. It wasn't supposed to be kind of this separate. And so I think this sort of merger that we saw of them using, kind of a nod to American culture and a nod to the Commonwealth and to Great Britain, that's something that is important for both of them. And it's something that we probably would have seen more of if it wasn't for lockdowns. But I'm sure going forward in the future, we'll see even more events like this, and probably even more events, again, in this future we all keep talking about where lockdowns no longer exist and people fly again, where they do sort of have events in both countries quite more often.
You can tell a lot of thought went into this engagement. I know that it had sort of been positioned by some of the tabloids over here that this was almost a rebuttal to his wreath not being used in the Remembrance Sunday ceremony here, that they then went and organized this. But from what I understand, this was something that had long been in the works. It was really something important for them to do. And you can see that in the details behind it. The cemetery that they chose to visit is actually opposite the Veterans Affairs Greater Los Angeles Healthcare System building, which was used by Meghan's grandfather, Alvin Ragland, after he served in the US Coast Guard. So there's sort of like little tie-ins here and there, and I think that that's very much how they do things. I mean, I think we're used to those little touches at this point. I think what was interesting about the story around Harry wanting to have a wreath laid in his name at the commemorative services here or service here in London, clearly struck a chord with so many. And after one of the British tabloids here published a picture of the actual wreath that Harry wanted to be laid in his name, sitting in a cardboard box in a warehouse somewhere in England, many fans felt compelled to do what they could to make some kind of gesture in Harry's name to the armed forces communities. And went in their very high numbers to donate money to the Invictus Foundation after they discovered that the wreath or the unused wreath was or retails for somewhere along the lines of £1,000, which I don't know what that is at the moment, $1,200, $1,300, something like that. So a group of fans all banded together to raise the exact same amount to donate to the Invictus Foundation in Harry's name, all leaving messages alongside their donations to say how much Harry has inspired them with his own contributions to the veteran and military communities. I think it was started by a Twitter user called the Ginger Avenger, which is quite apt. But it's now 4 days in, they have raised over £5,000. So they're well over their target. I caught up with a spokesperson at the Invictus Foundation earlier today who said that they've just been bowled over by the number of donations coming in, but also the incredible messages coming in with each one, talking about how important Harry's service to the military community continues to be for them.
I think it's such a great example of, put aside whatever family drama there is, and don't take sides, but just focus on the fact that this incredible moment where people from all over the world came together to raise money for an organization that is so deserving of it. I mean, what a great story. What a great sort of ending to everything.
And we'll see Harry continue supporting the military community later in the week. We, of course, just had US Veterans Day. And in light of that will be the 14th annual Stand Up for Heroes comedy event, which I'm sure most of you guys are familiar with. But this year it's taking place virtually, from an unknown location somewhere in New York. They've got musicians, Bruce Springsteen, Sheryl Crow, alongside Tiffany Haddish, Ray Romano, Jon Stewart, taking on some of the sort of comedy and hosting duties. But interestingly, alongside them, we've got Prince Harry joining the star-studded lineup.
Yeah, what a lineup.
Which will be very interesting. Stand Up For Heroes has been going on since 2007. They've raised like $55 million or such since then. So it's a huge fundraiser for the community. And I think it just shows how involved Harry is in these activities.
Yeah, and it's so good to see him continuing with it as well. I think, you know, if anything, this... what happened this past week just highlighted how important this community still is to him and how important, you know, he is to the community. The fact that all these people are reaching out and supporting him. So, you know, I love the fact that he's also performing, or I guess he doesn't perform. I'm not sure if he speaks.
I'm not sure.
He'd be a part of Stand Up For Heroes. Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. Is he doing stand up? I would watch it if he was doing stand up comedy. That would be a twist that no one saw coming. But also should give a shout out to our ABC colleague, Bob Woodruff, who started this foundation. And like you said, they've raised so much money and it's been just an amazing, I know, outlet for a lot of people. And it's great to see Harry.
Absolutely. And you can watch the whole thing live on the 18th of November on ABC News Live. Or I think it's also available on TikTok and a few of the other streaming apps. Mm. So that'll be interesting.
And Omid, I'm sure everyone's seen as well that this week all these headlines started popping up about that now, you know, iconic Diana interview that happened about 25 years ago after documentary from ITV came out. Sort of, you know, there's been controversy around this interview for years, and it was the subject of an investigation even, you know, 2 decades ago when it first came out. But it never really, there's no conclusion to it. And so now, 25 years later, we're sort of back where we started, where a lot of questions are being raised about how ethical this interview was. And if you remember, sort of a lot of inside rumors and allegations came about during this interview. You know, this is where we really heard about the inner life of Princess Diana, allegations of affairs that both people, her and Charles, had. You know, this was an interview that really caused a lot of controversy within the royal family and really touched upon personal things. So to have it sort of back in the conversation again is definitely causing a lot of headlines, especially when, you know, again, now what's coming into question is, you know, how ethical the means were to actually land this interview.
It's just, I found this story fascinating. I mean, I think everyone listening to this show will be familiar with that iconic Diana interview that she gave to Panorama, to Martin Bashir. You know, I think anyone who was around then will remember where they were when they saw it. You even see this one screenshot of that documentary. You know exactly what documentary it is. So many sort of, I guess, mind-blowing allegations and stories came out of that documentary. But what has been really interesting was to hear more recently some of the ways in which it was put together, more specifically, how Diana was convinced that this documentary or this interview would be a good idea. And as you say, ITV aired a documentary this week called The Diana Interview, Revenge of a Princess, that featured interviews that claimed Bashir had asked the BBC's graphic designer, one of the BBC's graphic designers, Matt Weisler, to create mock bank statements that seemingly proved to Diana that royal employees were getting paid to spy on her. This apparently at the time was something that she was increasingly worried about and concerned about. Some would even use the word paranoid about. And it's a rumour that never quite disappeared. And as you say, there was a report published recently in one of the British papers that in a 1996 internal investigation that they had already included that Bashir was an honest man, and they'd actually blamed the graphic designer for the entire episode. This designer has since been on British TV to talk about the incident. He said that he lost his career to this decision and what came out inside this internal investigation. But of course, with everything now to light, the BBC say that they're looking into the whole thing again. I reached out to the BBC director Tim Davey for a statement What I got back was that the BBC is taking this very seriously and we want to get to the truth. So that'll be very interesting to see how this pans out over the days ahead. You know, I'm always very hesitant when it's stories involving Diana from the past. You know, she is no longer with us to actually speak for herself. And I think we always have to bear that in mind. We don't know how she felt a lot about this. We're hearing from former friends, people that have worked alongside her now. And I think Daily Mail had quoted someone that was supposedly a close friend of hers, giving a lot of insight into what she was thinking at the time. But the facts here speak for themselves. And we have someone that worked on this show that says that forged bank statements were presented to the Royal at the time. And that in itself is unacceptable. But what the motives were, obviously, we're still not quite clear on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you make such a good point about, you know, it's obviously difficult to have these conversations and talking about this story when the woman we're talking about is no longer here to sort of give her side of it. And it also always makes me think of her sons and what they must think when their mom just keeps coming up in press, in controversies. And at some point, you've got to imagine they just kind of, they don't want to be reliving it constantly. And it's just got to be so hard.
Absolutely. Well, Bashir has not said anything at the time. He actually more recently has been suffering with a COVID-19 diagnosis and is said to have struggled with his health recently. So there hasn't been any word from him. BBC press office say that he is also recovering from quadruple heart bypass surgery. So I don't know if we will hear from him on this matter. He currently holds a role, I think, with the BBC, although I don't know exactly what that is. But it'll be interesting to see how this pans out over the days and weeks ahead. As you say, her sons are still very much aware of everything that's going on. And I hear from sources on both sides, Harry's and William's, that both Prince William and Prince Harry are very interested in the developments and have certainly been keeping an eye on everything as it's unfolded, as do we.
Yeah. And, you know, going on this same thread, I think that what's also fascinating about all of this bubbling up right now is that obviously all eyes are also on The Crown season 4 coming out this weekend, where we finally have Diana, who's going to be on screen and, you know, represented by an actress, obviously. But that must just be also extra stress and awareness that her sons are dealing with right now. You know, I can't imagine if they're going to watch this. I don't know. The whole thing is incredibly emotional for me to process. And I mean, I want to watch it, let's be real, but I can imagine it'd be very difficult. And now all of a sudden they're getting to more modern times, and wasn't that long ago that they're now portraying on screen.
Yeah, well, the reviews coming out now for this season 4 of The Crown have all been pretty good. I think a lot of people have been saying that Emma Corrin really shines in her role as Princess Diana, and I think the story of Charles and Diana is at the heart of this new season, and it's said to be pretty close to, I think, the reports that existed at that time. I think we all know there is sometimes a little creative license in The Crown, but the facts or the crux of these stories remain, you know, what is out there as sort of reported as truth. So be very interesting. Are you going to be tuning in? I mean, we have enough time on our hands.
I know. Okay, so I will admit that I've fallen behind on The Crown and I am not done with season 3 yet, but I watched the trailer for season 4 and OMG, it looks so good and intense that I was like, oh man, now I have to cram. I have to watch all season 3 so that I can start season 4 this weekend. But as you mentioned, I mean, I have literally nothing else on my plate this weekend, so I guess that's what I'm doing.
I'm looking forward to Gillian Anderson as Margaret Thatcher. She seems to have really nailed that well. I think that's a role within The Crown that I'm looking forward to seeing. I don't even know if I should admit this, actually, bearing in mind,
what are you about to
everything
say?
I do these days is about the royal family. I have never seen The Crown before.
What? Oma, we're ending the podcast right now. I'm sorry, everybody, it's over. Oma's going to go start with season 1, so you have 3 seasons to binge before Sunday.
Listen, here's my reason. We know the stories. We, you know, as a royal correspondent, I have covered in retrospect many of these stories, and certainly read the history around many of these stories, particularly those pertaining to the sort of earlier seasons or episodes of The Crown. And I was always very aware that what was in The Crown was often this sort of blend of creative license alongside what exists in the history books. And so there's a part of me that didn't want to bring the two together in sort of what I have in my head as knowledge. But at the same time, you sometimes don't want to bring your work home with you, you know? I'm all for something with like Kiefer Sutherland in. I can just like escape and be in another world.
All I say to that is, nice try. We're still going to go watch all three seasons this weekend, so we can discuss the fourth season next week. Okay, good talk.
I will. I will be tuning into this new season, absolutely. I would argue that you probably don't need to have seen the first three to enjoy this. Each one is its own sort of collection of stories. But I have the time. Okay. Here in the UK, PlayStation 5 doesn't come out for another week, so I do have a little bit of time on my hands when it comes to time in front of the television.
All right, fair enough.
Well, on that note, I guess I have some homework to do.
Yeah, you're going to be busy till I talk to you.
And let us know if you're tuning into The Crown. We'd love to know what you think of the new series, if you're watching, if you're binging it all in one go. Are you much of a binger, Maggie?
Yes, 100%. I'm going to sit down and watch all of them back to back. I have no self-control when it comes to binge watching.
No, I'm the same. I'll like finish it on the same day, whatever the show is. I've really got into The Undoing recently. Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant on HBO Max. Very, very good.
Really? Oh, this is good. Okay, I'm putting that on my to-watch list. I need new shows. I finally just watched all of Succession.
Oh, okay. Wow, okay. That's a little late. But I would say very...
I know.
Very,
all right. Apt. You know what? Harsh, first of all. Second, I know I was late, but long story short, that I don't have HBO Max, I had to sign up for Sky Now, which took me a month, and then I was backlogged, and then I was being cheap. This podcast has gone off the rails. Now we're just discussing our streaming plans.
You know, I will say, having watched and loved Succession, there are some similarities to that family.
To the royal family.
The royal family. I hope I don't get shot for saying this.
I thought the same exact thing. Yeah. Let's not go into too many details with risk, getting in trouble ourselves. But I thought the exact same thing.
I think on that note, I think we both need to call this a day. Guys.
Yeah, we need to love.
Send
we need
us
to
your
go.
Tweets. You know where to find us, at Maggie Rooley and at Scobie on Twitter. Until next Friday, look after yourselves and each other. And we'll see you then.